There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're going to look at the American First Amendment on the Business Breakfast this morning because a lot of people are running around shouting at each other about it. Literally, I'm looking at three different stories this morning where people are shouting free speech at each other. There is the Laura Ingraham row between the conservative television host and some of the recent shooting survivors in the US, David Hogg, particularly from Parkland. I'm reading a commentary at the moment that says the vision of free speech that is being revealed by the American right, very expensive for conservatives, but far less accommodating for those who disagree with them. That obviously is coming from a left-wing website, but the argument is flowing both ways. CNN involved in a row in the last 24 hours during an Easter event at the White House. The CNN senior correspondent Jim Acosta was shouting questions at President Donald Trump whilst he was involved with an activity with children. Trump's campaign manager, Brad Parscale, accused Acosta of breaking protocol for shouting questions at an inappropriate time. Acosta shouted, "Read the First Amendment." In fact, you can hear it all here.
Mr. President, what about the DACA kids? Should they worry about what's going to happen to them, sir? Didn't you kill DACA, sir? Didn't you kill DACA?
And he ended up by telling the campaign manager to go away and read the First Amendment. We've been talking here in the Business Breakfast what proposals for immigrant and non-immigrant visas could mean for people's ability to feel they can express themselves freely on social media if they have to hand over all of their social media handles if they want to come into the US. So let's get a bit more information about what the First Amendment actually does cover and what is happening in the US at the moment. We are joined now by Professor Vernon Pedersen. He is head of the Department of International Studies at the College of Arts and Science at American University of Sharjah. It's lovely to have you in, Professor. Thanks for coming.
I'm delighted to be here.
I feel like we're having a First Amendment moment. What's going on?
Well, part of it has to do with the misunderstanding of what the First Amendment's actually all about. The First Amendment is not about being polite. It's not about being appropriate. It simply says that every American has the right to say what they genuinely believe and that they should not be restricted from saying this. It doesn't protect us from lying to each other. It doesn't protect us from slandering each other. And alas, it doesn't say anything about being rude, which Jim Acosta most certainly was this morning.
Right. Why do you think, let me ask this. Is it unusual for it to become such a political hot potato in the way that it has under the Trump administration, or do we see this with every administration?
Not with every administration, but it's cropped up in the past many, many times. And it always happens in periods when American politics is sharply and violently divided. The last time that we were in such a bad shape was the turn of the 19th century, when American newspapers regularly printed the most scandalous lies about each other, where everybody was rude. What's different now is the immediacy of the media. Everything was filtered by time and distance before.
What's different now is also social media, because there's a lawsuit actually going on in the States at the moment with something called the Knight First Amendment Institute, and I'm assuming it does exactly what it says on the tin, and a bunch of people who have been blocked by Donald Trump on Twitter. And the argument is whether or not the president should be allowed to block people on Twitter, and if in doing so he is getting in the way of their First Amendment rights, whether he should just mute them, whether he has to listen to what they have to say.
Unfortunately, he does not. The right of free speech does not mean you have the right to be listened to. It means you have the right to say it.
How else is things changing? I'm thinking of the fact that fake news has now become sort of part of our lexicon. What impact does that have?
In part, it's a massive smokescreen. It's one of the things that distresses me most about the state of American politics and American discourse right now, is that rather than trying to engage each other in a more nuanced fashion, we just say it's lies, it's fake, it's not true.
But there's nothing new about people trying to discredit each other.
Not a bit. In fact, it's a famous American tradition.
But what happens when we get into the strange sort of area that we are now with fake news accusations, people talking about alternative facts, misspeaking. What does that do for truth and the perception of it?
Well, frankly, that part distresses me a great deal. It's partly a result of how violently polarized things are right now, that you have to demonize your opponents and reject them outright. Because to say, well, you know, you might have a point here, then all of a sudden you're open to compromise and you're open to something that you don't want. But it's also very much a part of the fragmenting of the media with the internet and with Twitter and with social media. Back when I was a child, in the height of the Eisenhower administration, we only had three news outlets. So you get a much more common experience, and you get a much more accepted set of standards. It just doesn't happen today, and because the change is so new, we haven't navigated our way through it yet. I actually firmly believe we'll come out on the other side with a much better understanding of how it works and how to focus ourselves again.
Which is interesting, because at the moment, I mean, I've been looking at some tweets that the U.S. president's been tweeting overnight about the Sinclair News row, where you have one news organization who is having all of its anchors read out a prepared statement denouncing other media that's not them.
Yes.
And this morning you have the president tweeting that what Sinclair is doing is right and that they are the good guys, not like those bad fake CNN, et cetera, people. How unusual is it to have a president disparaging one portion of the press, upholding the other? Is it just because we can see it on Twitter that it feels new? Did this always happen, but through different channels?
This has always happened. And to give you one of my favorite examples, Richard Nixon was constantly enraged at the news coverage he got and constantly enraged at the media. He was particularly unhappy with the Washington Post for a strange reason.
I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
You mentioned Eisenhower there. I mean, I grew up sort of during the Kennedy era, John F. Kennedy, and he was the first president that I really remember taking a note of, and I remember exactly where I was the day that he was shot.
Yeah, so do I.
With the changes of administration, for me as a non-American, you know, they're all very polite, intelligent guys generally, and what party they're on didn't seem to matter too much. But it seems suddenly to me that sort of party politics have taken almost a verbally violent turn. And I'm wondering whether the American presidency will ever be a nice, polite place ever again.
That is an excellent question. And that actually is one of the biggest concerns about the Trump presidency, as he has violated so many what used to be considered norms of discourse at the level of the presidency, a certain amount of decorum, a certain amount of restraint. He's simply thrown it out the window. Part of the reason for that, though, is our own fault. We became so careful about everything we said. We became so scripted. Hillary Clinton, lady whom I was very fond of, had very much that problem that she never said what she thought. She said what she felt she was supposed to say. And a big section of the American population got tired of that. And they saw Trump's spontaneity, rudeness, willingness to say whatever was on his mind as being more authentic.
Sort of more reflecting of American life.
Yeah, absolutely. And they still do, which is why he tweets, because it continually reinforces what the base wants to hear.
How long before people get fed up with that, though?
Oh, God, I hope very soon.
Let's look at one of the other areas where people are doing a bit of yelling about free speech. And I have to say, it was something that I did feel very concerned about, more than Malk's, I think. And that was this suggestion, the proposal that's out at the moment, 60 days gathering opinion from the public, for the US to ask anyone applying for an immigrant or non-immigrant visa for their social media handles. Malk's makes the point, probably completely correct, that for 99.9% of people, the immigration officials are not going to sit down and go through your Twitter feed for an hour.
Because it's impossible. The sheer volume is too much.
Exactly. My worry, though, is that regardless of whether they even look at it, it would make you think twice about putting something up that was, you know, anti-US or retweeting a Trump funny or something. Mm. And that in that way, it sort of censors you without actually having to do anything.
Well, in fact, that is one of the most effective bars on free speech in the world, is to set up an atmosphere where people self-censor themselves. A perfect example in the past was, and this is brought up in the Laura Ingraham stuff, the McCarthy era, where the mere suggestion that you held liberal or socialist opinions was enough to have you socially ostracized or damaged at work. So I agree, this is something we should not be doing. This is people's private lives, and this is their business.
You're a university professor. 5-10 years from now, when you're speaking to your students about this period in American history, how do you think you're going to be talking about it?
Actually, I've envisioned that many times myself. But what I'll be talking about is the same way I talk about other periods in American history. There are some much broader things going on, and all the fluff and screaming and excitement on the surface is really a manifestation of that. And what it is America's changing role in the world and the fact that we're changing demographically to a dramatically different country.
Well, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Professor Vernon Pedersen is head of the Department of International Studies at the College of Arts and Sciences at American University of Sharjah. Thanks for coming in.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.